Blog Talk Radio.
BYGP family and guests, thank you for tuning in tonight. My name is Ashley Goodman, and I will be your host for tonight's BYGP Locker Room Show. I'm excited to be speaking with Ms. Johanna Strenchok, who is the Director of Football Student Athlete Academic Development at University of Cal Berkeley. Johanna has some fantastic points to share with you guys to reach your full potential off the field, which is key when coaches are making decisions to offer you that scholarship. I really hope you take this opportunity to really take it all in, and if you guys do have any questions, please don't hesitate to call in, and we'll get to you. So let's get Johanna on the air. Johanna, are you with us?
I'm here.
Good, good, good. It's so good to have you on here. I know it was a little crazy with the traveling, but I'm glad that you could make it, and I do promise to get you out by 9 o'clock.
I appreciate it, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Good, good. So we know that you are currently at Cal, but tell us what other schools were you at before Cal, and what role and positions were you in?
Well, I actually started at Florida State University. I was getting my master's degree in sport administration, and I began as a tutor for the student athletes in January of 2009. And from there, mm-hmm. I moved up to become a post-master's intern, which is more of an assistant academic advisor for football. And then finally, in January of 2011, I became the full-time football advisor for UNLV. So that's kind of where I was at previously. After Florida State, I went to UNLV as their assistant director, and I was in charge of advising for football as well as the men's and women's tennis teams, the men's swimming team for a little bit, and then the men's golf team.
Okay. So you have an array outside of football as well.
Yes.
Okay, so how did you even get started with football? Was that just something you wanted to do, or were you placed there?
I kind of fell into it as I started tutoring, and honestly, it went from working 10 hours a week to working a little under 40 hours a week and being put with more of the at-risk student-athlete population as well as the revenue sport population. So I just kind of fell into it, and then from there, my experience started to build with football, and that's when you develop the relationship with the students, that's kind of how you get into it. And so I ended up developing relationships with a lot of those students and just kind of worked up to being the advisor and then remaining football.
Okay. That makes sense. So did you know that you wanted to go in this direction, or was it something that you kind of just fell into?
I actually definitely fell into it. When I went to Florida State to get my master's, I was thinking I was going to be a coach, or I was going to go into sport marketing or be a sports agent. And I took the job as a tutor, and I fell in love with just the academic side of it. And having been a former athlete, I really enjoyed the athletic side. So it felt like you had a purpose in that you were actually driving the students towards success in both areas. So I think it's
absolutely
just definitely found my passion in it.
Well, good. Yeah. That is very key to be in love with what you're doing. So then, do you feel that you know, for the most part, that student athletes do take their education seriously with the what you experienced?
I think yes, they do. There are, we all like certain things and don't like certain things, and you know, school may not be something that we all enjoy, but I do believe that there are students who really want to learn and really want to grow, and there are also students who know that that is what they need to do in order to play a sport, and I think that goes across the board with any sport, but
absolutely.
I think that people in our role actually instill pride and the passion for academics in the students, especially those who may come from families where it may not be that much of a priority.
Yes, very much so. So then do you feel like as a university that athletes are getting the support that, you know, to come out with a degree to be successful in the classroom?
Hands down, yes. We provide, and at every university that I've worked at, we have provided tutorial support, learning specialist support, advising, anything that they need, and even going into personal development and professional development. I think the key is, do they want it? And you can provide it to anyone, but if that person doesn't want it, then he or she is not going to succeed, and he or she is not going to get the all that that
absolutely.
So I think that they have all the tools that they need to be successful. It's just based on utilizing it and also just sucking it dry for everything that it has.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And you are right that, you know, not everyone's going to love being in the classroom and doing everything of that nature, but what they ultimately want to do, that is required that, you know, they do well in the classroom. So that, you know, that totally makes sense. Now, I have been reading a whole lot about Mary Willingham, who I don't know if you have spent much time about reading up on her, but I wanted to get your input on her and her speaking out and bringing attention to the University of North Carolina for having fake classes for athletes, and also saying, you know, that some of the football players and basketball players were actually reading at like an elementary grade level. So, I mean, do you think that, I mean, that takes a lot for her to do, but, you know, what do you think about that?
I definitely think that it took a lot for her to come out and kind of show everyone what was going on. I mean, based on a few articles that I've read, this had been going on for almost 10 to 12 years. So I do think that that's honorable. I don't really know. I wasn't there, so I'm not sure of the situation or the circumstances that caused her to do so, but if what she brought to light is accurate, which it appears to be based on news reports, I think that that's a very honorable thing, because student-athletes should not have any special consideration when it comes to going to class and earning a grade.
Absolutely.
Every student should be held to the same standard. So if that was not taking place at UNC, then it definitely should have been brought to light.
Yes.
And as far as the admissions and the level at which the students read and write, I mean, again, that's if I read a little bit about questioning of the research because of her position of not being a formal researcher, but
yeah, I read that
if
too.
The research was this, you know, then it really can't be disputed. I think the bigger picture there is that in my opinion, it all starts in middle school and high school, and that's where the preparation is. So I think that if we fail the students, we would fail them more so in the beginning stages of their education, because that is what
absolutely.
Is necessary to prepare them for college.
Yes.
So, again, I mean, I'm sure there is some truth and value to what she has brought to light. I can't really comment on whether it's accurate. I do think that preparation in high school should be key and will be key, and that also falls on the student-athlete wanting to do well.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, at some point, the student has to take, you know, responsibility for his preparation and for his time in that class and what he's learning or she's learning. So, yeah, I totally agree with you on that point. Now, you know, this is I think this is pretty standard, you know, when I was going through school and college and everything. But is it still pretty much that 3 credit hours, which is like one course, meaning that you would spend 3 hours in a class per week? Is that still the same about spending 6 to 9 hours out of class to study for that one class?
Yes, and that's what we always tell our students to do. Realistically, do I think that every student spends 6 to 9 hours per 3 credit class? I don't think non-student athletes do. But I do think that just kind of showing them how important it is and how much time it really does take to learn and know and build the knowledge
exactly.
in the class, I think kind of just that idea makes them put in a lot more effort than they may have in the past. Yes, that definitely comes to be pushed very, very heavily.
Yeah, so for those of you, you know, a student athlete, you would be taking 12 units, which is, you know, considered full-time student, which is meaning 12 hours in class per week, and that would consist of 24 to 36 hours outside of class. Now, again, you know, you are right that give or take, you may not spend about, you know, the amount of time for each class. I can contest probably didn't spend on certain classes that amount of hours, but, you know, that gives you an understanding of how many hours it is just requiring for your studies. Now, how many study hours do you guys, for Cal athletes, do you guys require for study hours that they complete each week?
So Cal is a little bit different than UNLV and FSU, which I actually really do like how we do it at Cal. So what we do at the beginning of every semester, our lead football advisor and I will sit down and we'll set aside maybe 3-4 hours, and we will actually go through each individual on the team, whether he's a returning student or an incoming student, and we will
mm-hmm.
look at him as a student based on GPA, based on responsibility. Does he turn his things in on time, or are we always nagging him? What is his skill level? Even if he has a 3.0, what courses did he take to get there? Are they courses that were a little bit easier, and now he's enrolled in tougher classes? So we take a very holistic approach at Cal, and we will specifically assign 3 tiers of academic support to a student. So it would start with a weekly or a biweekly meeting with my advisor or myself, and
uh-huh.
we would have a 10 to 15 minute meeting either every other week or every week depending on the at-risk level, and just kind of go over everything that's going on, any grades, just kind of a check-in to keep communication going. And that's with good
Absolutely.
Students, students who are doing very well in school and those who may be struggling a little bit. And
uh-huh.
then we move to the next one, which would be an academic coach who is our graduate student tutor, and then
okay.
a learning specialist. And then we also have undergraduate tutors, but we kind of look at each student, and one student might have 10 hours, one student might have 3, depending on what he needs. So that's kind of how we do it. Freshmen specifically, we would give them 6 hours to start, or even incoming junior college transfers, just because
uh-huh.
of rigors of the university and the fact that they may not be completely prepared for,
Absolutely.
Especially Berkeley.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually really do like that approach because, you know, when I was at Nevada, you know, we would have across the board, they would have to, you know, complete all the same hours, no matter if you were, you know, a 3.8 student or a 2.0 student, you were doing the same hours. So I felt like, you know, those guys that were, you know, doing everything that they needed to do, I mean, pretty much they're just there to fill some hours, but they could have been maybe doing something more productive or something else that they didn't really need. So I like that approach that Cal has actually taken. Do you know any other school that does it that way?
Well, UNLV, what we did when I came in, we actually took it from doing like a group study hall and a daily requirement to we broke the students into 2 groups, where it was one group who would have mandatory at night 4 days a week or 5 days a week simply because they were struggling and they needed that structure. But then for the
okay.
students who were kind of in the middle where they weren't completely independent, they didn't have the excellent time management skills, but they had shown that they could succeed in the classroom on their own, in that they were on the road to independence, we provided them with what was an hour requirement. So they would check in with my advisor who worked with me, either one of us, and they would check in when they had work to do. But they had a requirement each week. But it was building that skill set to be able to determine when he had work to do and when he didn't, and when did he work the best, in the morning, was it in the afternoon, was it in the evening, and actually creating that ability to develop patterns and develop habits that were conducive to success for each individual student athlete.
That is definitely interesting, because that can just go on to when he goes into, you know, after college, and that goes into just being going into habits and setting that standard for his career or her career. So that I like that approach too. That's definitely. Now, did they come to you and ask you your opinions, or was that kind of just placed once you got there?
I kind of brought it once I got there, I think they were kind of on the path to doing that, just because I think many schools have realized that throwing the team into one big room every night at the same time is not conducive to success. It's not, I mean, there's probably studies that would show that it's just not a good approach, because the students become distracted. Like you said, if they don't have work to do that night, well, they're going to actually think of study hall as punishment or as a waste of time rather than
exactly.
a time when they can get work done.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So then do you see, I mean, for Cal's percentage of graduation rates, what is it for football within Cal Berkeley?
It's 44%.
44%, okay. And then do you see a good amount of athletes who have left early to go pro that actually return and finish and get their degree?
Well, back to the graduation rate, the one that was published, it shows the students who had enrolled prior to, I believe it was 2007, so the GSR measures from a six-year cohort, and it's from the year that they entered to 6 years afterwards. So the 2013 graduation rate for us was 44%, and the reason
okay.
that was so low is because during the era before Sunny, a lot of student-athletes were leaving early to go to the NFL, and although
uh-huh.
they were successful in the league, they did not return. And that's what caused that number to be so low. So although they may have a career, they may still even be in the NFL because they missed that window to graduate. They are counted
yeah.
against the university.
Currently,
we have several guys who are back. We have Javid Best is back. We have Ryan Davis, Nyan Boateng, and a couple others who are J.J. Arrington, who are coming back and are working with one of the advisors at our school, Aaron Giacosa, who is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, and he's actually taking the lead on guiding these students through coming back, what they need to complete, you know, kind of offering them the support that they need. And they've been successful, and I think that they'll continue to be successful. We've had a couple guys call us recently who are interested in returning, so I think that's a great
yeah.
show that it's probably going to increase the next couple of years.
Absolutely. So, I mean, within that, so if they do graduate, that will increase your percentage. Is that correct?
Yeah, so as long as they are within their six-year window from the time that they
okay.
entered full-time at the university, then they
uh-huh.
will count positively, and they also have to leave eligible. They cannot leave
okay.
in poor academic standing.
Okay. That definitely makes sense. So then how do you help these students, like you yourself? I'm sure there's, you know, quite a bit of people who are helping with this, but how do you help a student athlete prepare for post-graduate life?
Everything we do is built around the idea that what you're doing now applies to life somehow. And we
uh-huh.
always make sure that we reiterate that in everything we teach them. So, for example, one of the biggest things that I emphasize with the team is communication. And it's communication with each other, with their coaches, with our staff,
uh-huh.
and especially the professors, where
yes.
if you're going to be late, you call and say you're going to be late. If you don't like something,
yeah.
responsible, you call a meeting, you say, I don't like this. But it's
mm-hmm.
all about communication, because when there's a lack of it, misunderstandings take place, and things that you want to say and that you want to be heard are not heard, and it's misinterpreted. So that's kind of my biggest thing with them is communication. If you don't like something, you come, we'll talk through it. If you're not doing well in a class, you go to your professor. You talk to him. Our tutoring does not replace that relationship.
Yes.
And I think the way that communication applies is if you were in a job and you just decided you weren't going to call your boss to let him know you're going to be late, well, you're probably going to get fired. So
absolutely,
you should make sure that you're thinking about the repercussions of your actions now and how they will affect you in the future.
Absolutely. And I think we really do emphasize, you know, our listeners and pretty much with the academic program with BYGP is, you know, we're geared to 13 to 19-year-old football players who are serious about, you know, going on and playing college ball. So, and we do constantly explain to them that communication is very key, you know, and making sure that they're understanding where the coaches are at, where their teachers are at, and everything of that nature. So that is definitely a good point that you just made with that. So within that, do you feel that what has been some good things that you've seen your athletes have the balance of school work and with their football? How have they been able to balance that? You know, some tips that you could give our athletes.
I always start with make a calendar. Even, you know, being the director, like I tell my students all the time, I could not go through each day without a calendar or a to-do list. And as ancient as writing things that may seem
Absolutely.
To the generation today, that I think, honestly, that's one of the biggest things that I tell them is write everything down, make a calendar, make a weekly calendar, and also break things up into mini goals so that you can achieve something small each day. Because
Absolutely.
That sense of satisfaction that you get from one thing each day is going to drive you to stay on the same track of managing your time well and chipping away at projects each day rather than waiting until the last minute. And
Absolutely.
Those calendars, coming back to the calendars, if you create one that's a small snapshot and then another that's maybe a semester at a glance, you're going to know that in 3 weeks you have a paper due, so you can start researching right now.
Yeah, and are you more of a person, because I am definitely a list person, the type A personality, but are you more of a person that you write your list the morning of, you know, of that day, or do you do it the night before and kind of set your mind so before you go to bed, you already have that list ready and ready to go for that following day?
The funny thing with me is it's probably crazy. I write lists over throughout the day, so I'll write it at night to prepare for the next day, and I'll put it in the center of my desk when I leave at night. And then the next morning, I'll look at it, and I'll start crossing things off. And by midday, I have already rewritten the list and added things. So.
Okay, that is definitely. So you just really want to make sure that you have it all down, pretty much.
But I'm so afraid of forgetting something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by all means, if it's working, then stick with it, because that's definitely. And also, you know, as you get more and more on your plate for these athletes, and once they're going into the level of college ball, they're going to have, you know, multiple things. They're going to have papers due, projects, football, lifting, everything. And so you got to make sure that we're getting everything down and understanding when something is due. So that does, I think the list is a great idea. And you should probably even just start that for high school athletes, student athletes. They should start that now when they're young, even if they don't have, you know, very much to do, they should start it now just to get in the habit of once they do make it, you know, to that college level.
Oh, 100%. And it's never too early to start.
Yeah. Now, do you guys, when you guys get your incoming freshmen, is that kind of like, you know, step number one, make sure that you have, you know, your organization distills down, or how is that kind of operated once you have your incoming freshmen or coming in?
We immediately show them how to break their class. Well, it's getting to know the syllabus, how to read through a syllabus, where to find important dates, where to find office hours, and all the important information. And then we teach them how to draw those dates off of that syllabi and put it into a weekly calendar or a biweekly calendar, as well as a calendar that includes their entire semester.
Okay. So you guys are very, very specific on those times. So I like that. That's a good rule on that. So then tell us about how difficult, because, I mean, I've seen it personally. I've never been in this position, but once you get on academic probation, how difficult really is it to, you know, get back on track and get, you know, going again?
It's very tough. It's relative to the year that you're in. So, for instance, if you're a freshman, it might be a little bit easier simply because you don't have as many hours accumulated, so your GPA can fluctuate pretty easily.
Yeah.
But when you get to the point where it's a double-edged sword, because if you fall on probation your freshman year, you're already setting yourself up for an uphill climb. And it's very, very, very tough to go from a very low GPA to a higher GPA because every semester is getting tougher. So you've already found yourself in a hole during the semester that's supposed to be your easiest.
Absolutely.
So if you get on it as a freshman, that's where it's going to be difficult because you're already down, and now you're just climbing a hill, and you're climbing it 10 times faster than everybody else because you have already set yourself up for failure. Now, when you get to junior and senior or even sophomore, now your issue is you are accumulating hours, so the ability to move your cumulative GPA becomes a little bit more difficult because now it takes a lot more. It takes a lot more both ways. But if you are under a 2.0, it's going to take a significant A or B or two A's or a B to get you to that 2.0, and then you have to maintain it. And usually you're going into the fall with a GPA that's very close to the 2.0, and now you're worried that you could fall below. So I think once you get to that point, it's very dangerous. So I think that, I mean, if you can avoid that at all costs, that's definitely what you want to do because it ends up making both football and school something you don't enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, speaking of, you just kind of hit my next point that when you're looking at taking classes for the fall and the spring, you know, semester or however, do you look at it as taking strategic classes, maybe more difficult ones when you're not in season, or how do you really operate? And what if athletes do want to exceed 12 units? How do you feel about that?
So what we do is we look at what they need to complete as far as general education and any requirements they may need to complete to be on track for progress towards degree. Then what we will do is we will look at the possibilities of classes, and maybe instead of putting four hard classes in the fall, we might put two, and then maybe two of the classes that wouldn't be as challenging, and then build up the spring where, I mean, we have some student-athletes who might take 16 to 18 credits in the spring, because they want to get the most difficult classes done, and they also want to make progress towards graduation a little bit quicker. In the fall, there are no easy classes at Berkeley, so that's definitely difficult, but we do make sure that it's a schedule that can be balanced so that they're not in three writing-intensive classes during the fall, which would set them up to be in a very compromising position. We might have them in one writing intensive class, one math class, and then maybe an elective so that they have a little bit of balance in their schedule.
Okay, yeah, that definitely makes some sense. Now, do you guys, I mean, have you seen a lot of your athletes, or not a lot, but, you know, fairly a good amount of athletes who have you know, done their undergrad work and now are working on their master's degree while still, you know, playing ball?
I saw a few of those at UNLV and at Florida State. Cal is a little bit more difficult. The requirements to get into their grad schools are it's very high. And also their deadlines fall about a year prior to the semester that you would actually enroll. So I'm not sure right now. I think we have two students on our team right now who are thinking about it, and I think they're very capable, and they would do a wonderful job. So I've been there. I haven't seen anybody else. Now, we did have one student who completed two degrees while he was here. And we had Dustin Hopkins, who completed his master's, as well as Christian Ponder.
Okay, so I mean, you have seen it, but it is very somewhat rare within Cal's, you know, program.
Within Cal, it's rare, but you know, it's only rare if the student comes in with that goal, he can achieve it. No doubt about it. But it's just maintaining that specific GPA and making sure that you have a plan. You know, if you have a plan, which the students speaking of now, they actually have a plan and they know what they want to do, it's definitely achievable.
Yeah. Now, do you see, I know like at UCLA, it was pretty much across the board, history was the athlete, you know, degree to get. Is that kind of similar to Cal, that there's pretty much one degree that you see across the board for every athlete, you know, going for?
To be honest, I expected that when I got there, but it really isn't like that. We have a really good mix of majors, which is very surprising, a great, great thing. We have several students who are American Studies, Sociology, African American Studies, Interdisciplinary Sciences, Business. We have, I think, 5 to 7 guys in the business school, Integrative Biology. I think there's one who's Chemistry. There's one who's doing Mathematics. So it's very different. The students at Cal are just, Cal Berkeley just has a way of drawing students' ability to think critically, and it's a way that I've never seen at any school. The professors just really force the students to infer answers rather than just pull the answer out of the book because it's right there in front of them. And I think because they are putting that skill in every class, they just it prepares them even better for life outside of football and college.
In college, yeah, absolutely. So then I'll end with this last question. I mean, when you're speaking to a student athlete, what do you feel you know, for our 13 to 19-year-old high school athletes, what do you think the three most important tips you would give them to succeed?
I think my first thing would be to find value in everything you do and everything that is expected of you. I know there's definitely things that all of us do each day that we don't want to do or we don't really see the point in it. But I think I've found that it's very, very beneficial to think of what you need to do and then think of why you're doing it and what it's going to do to get you to your ultimate goal. And once you find that connection, it no longer becomes a burden. It is more of something that is a step towards your goal. So now it has value.
Absolutely. I think it gives you a bigger picture instead of just viewing it as something that you dislike doing or you hate doing. It's just miserable. You're looking at it as it's going towards ultimately your dream to achieve. So, yeah, that is definitely. And then what were the other two?
And the second one would be learn from yours as well as the mistakes of others. I spoke with the students when I think it was probably about a couple months after I came in, I stood in front of the team and told them about how I played, you know, I was a Division III basketball player, walk-on at Marymount, and at a time when I could have really focused and really been extremely disciplined and gone after my dream, I didn't, and I used being tired or being too busy as an excuse to not go after that dream, and as a result, was not at the level that I could have been and didn't pursue the dream of playing basketball or pursue the dream of being the best in the classroom. And from that, I told them, sit here and take in every opportunity you have and every experience in which you find yourself and really understand that it is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And if you hear someone say, don't do what I did or don't waste that chance like I did or I've made this mistake, please don't do it. Take those words and, as hard as it is, try to apply them and avoid that mistake and not make that decision.
Yes, that is definitely a great point, and I hope you guys just heard that, because just speaking from my own experience, I know what you're talking about. But definitely listen to what we're saying, who we're bringing on, and definitely listen to those who are trying to help. And then fill us in on the last one that's your biggest tip.
And the last one I would say is definitely to communicate at all levels. And I think that really goes into relationships, it goes into your work, it goes into every part of your life. If you don't learn the proper way to communicate with others, verbally, non-verbally, whatever it may be, it will hinder your ability to be the best that you can be, because communication is key in anything that you do.
Absolutely, yes. And that goes beyond, both for on and off the field, guys. So definitely those 3 points, I hope you guys really did take in and understand that. Re-listen to it if you didn't hear it the first time, but definitely. Joanna, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and we will definitely be in touch and get you back on to do something else with us. But I'm glad your flight went safe and you got to your destination okay. So we will let you go. I promised you 30 minutes. It went a little over, but thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And definitely for everyone who's listening, make sure that if you have the opportunity to do anything that you want to, go for it 100% and don't look back at all.
Absolutely. That is great. Great, great, great. Okay, so we will talk to you soon.
Wonderful. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Good. Okay. Goodbye. So I hope you guys got something out of tonight's show. Guys, I know and I understand that academics is not the most exciting topic. I know it's not Ray Lewis speaking to you or Tom Brady telling you, how to throw the best ball, but it is super important for you guys to take this all in and understand that the bigger picture is to help you reach your full potential on and off the field. And so make sure that you do get those tips that Johanna had, generally had given you. I will be actually going on next week. Our show is on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6:30, but we want to thank you so much for tuning in. And if you have not gotten our book, make sure you check that out, the BYGP Before You Go Pro book. Make sure that you check that book out. And we appreciate you joining us tonight. Stay hungry and determined for your dream. This is Ashley Goodman signing off for BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Make sure you guys tune in next week. Have a good night, guys.